south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
Here's a story I've been wanting to tell you for a long time. You do like stories about living in Latin America pertaining to gringos, don't you? I thought so. Let's talk about first world medical treatment here in Latin America. I know a lot about that. I know I must have mentioned this fact on a past show. About 26 or 7 years ago now, when I first came down here to Latin America, I was suffering from a few common first world ailments. One being I had arthritis in my left knee, diagnosed carpal tunnel in my right hand, and they wanted to operate up in the States. You know, even back then I was a victim of the computer keyboard age. Not to mention, way back when I first came down, I had high blood pressure. I hear 3 out of 4 adult Americans suffer from that right now. Anyway, about maybe a month ago, I was helping out my maintenance man with some plumbing chores. Sometimes, you know, that's a two-man job. I like to get involved a little bit and keep my eye on these guys, too, because, you know, details, details, that's what us gringos are all about. And your average Latin maintenance guy, called, by the way, an albañil down here. That's albañil, begins with an A. They're what you might call a jack-of-all-trades up in the States. Oh, they'll get the job done all right. The electrical and plumbing will function. But some of these guys can't draw a straight line, and they don't have a level or a plumb bob. So a simple job can sometimes look like the Three Stooges had done it. Anyway, a pipe wrench slipped, and I bashed and cut my right thumb. I was wearing gloves, of course, but it didn't matter. Next day, it swelled up pretty good, and man, was it tender. I never was so conscious in my life that your thumb, well, you use it for everything. Next day, still tender, and it swelled up even more. I phoned up a personal friend of mine, a medical professional, and I said, what do I do? Who do I go to? And that, you know, really is the value of coming down to Latin America and knowing people and having a network, which some people say is the best part of my Latin Insider seminars. Not to put a plug in for the seminar, but just to say you need to have some real trusted professionals, and how else are you going to meet them, right? Anyway, he sent me off to a female dermatologist in the big city. In fact, she's an internal medicine specialist and expert in skin conditions, received her undergraduate degree in a private Latin university, specialty degree in the U.S. and Spain. So anyway, she's located in a nice upscale strip mall. This is way off the Gringo Tourist Trail, by the way. And when I walked in there, there was nothing but women sitting in the waiting room. And I know they had to be upscale women. Why? Because there was a little sign at the reception desk that said, Monday is Botox Day. Now, not that Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday aren't Botox days too, but it just so happens on Monday, Botox is $6 a unit, for whatever that means, and the rest of the week, it's $7 a unit. Now, I understand in the States, it runs anywhere from $15 to $20 a unit when it's administered by a specialist like a dermatologist or a plastic surgeon. However, I understand if you go to one of those Botox parties, where a beautician or a veterinary assistant's handing out the Botox, I guess it can be around 10 to 15 bucks a unit. That's the rumor on the grapevine down here anyway. By the way, do they still have Botox parties up in the States, or is that as old as disco? It's all the rage down here right now. Lag time again, huh? So again, I'm the only gringo in the waiting room. In fact, I'm the only male in the waiting room. There's about 7 or 8 other women waiting to get pummeled by those needles. By the way, I asked the doctor later on, what's the average amount of Botox people get in her office? She said, some people need the minimum around 30 units, and some people 50, which means at minimum 30 separate hits with a needle, all within a tiny space of time. Don't think I could handle that. But as expat Eddie's runway model fiancé once told me when she was trying to fit into some stiletto high heels, she said, beauty and pain are two sides of the same coin. So anyway, I filled out the patient history form and all that, and guess what? Immediately, my gringo advantage kicked in. She took me ahead of everybody. Oh, and by the way, when I asked her about that Botox discount day, she said the reason why she does that on Mondays is because apparently a bottle of Botox contains 100 units, and a lot of the patients come in, they only need 30 or 50, and after you open the bottle, if there's any unused portion, it only lasts about 1 day before it's ineffective. So often in the past, when she had just one Botox patient, she'd have to throw the rest of the units in the bottle away because she didn't use the whole thing. So, thus, cut rate Botox Mondays. Makes sense, huh? So anyway, she ushered me in and I sat down in her very nice first world office slash examination room. And of course, seeing that I was a gringo, she informed me of the last two or three times she'd been up to the States, Miami, Orlando, Nueva Jersey, Nueva York, etc. Oh, and by the way, for Latins whose English is not nearly 100%, they always say Nueva York instead of New York. Or Nueva Jersey for New Jersey, because Nueva is new, so Nueva York. That's why you'll hear Latins down here saying over and over again, Chicago, Nueva York, and Miami. And oddly enough, I met a lot of Latins who are totally confused with New Mexico versus Mexico. Nueva Mexico versus Mexico. Especially young adult Latinos and adolescents. They think they're the same thing. Or that one is part of the other. Some think that New Mexico is in Mexico. I guess maybe they are. Sí, señor. But the confusion doesn't end there. There's Panama City, Florida, and then there's Panama City, Panama. Don't get me started. That's right. Even Latins with nearly 100% English fluency just can't seem to smooth out that accent. And it works in reverse, too. We can't seem to kill our gringo accents, either. In fact, the only Latins I ever meet down here that have perfect English without an accent are kids who have a gringo parent and or kids who have continuously attended one of those private expensive helicopter schools where 20 to 30% of the faculty are native English speakers like you and me. That said, instantly, as I walked into the doctor's examining room, she immediately broke into English. And it was pretty good, but not perfect. Though her accent was fairly muted because she picked up one of her university degrees in the States. Now, you gotta know, after I've been down here a quarter century or more, I almost always speak Spanish. That's become sort of my default language. Because I'm way off the gringo tourist trail nearly all the time, and unless I'm speaking directly to an identifiable gringo, I speak Spanish. With, of course, my terrible Chicago accent, I guess. And even then, sometimes when I'm speaking English, I'll shove in a few Spanish words because, well, getting old, I guess. So anyway, for the first 3 or 4 minutes, we're speaking in English, and then she pops out of the room, comes back in, and I start speaking in Spanish to her, and she stops me and says, "No, no, please, English." Okay, so we speak in English, then she pops out of the room again, comes back in, I start in Spanish again because I'm, you know, speaking Spanish all the time here. Who knows, maybe just a touch of Alzheimer's kicking in. Then she said again, "No, please, English." By the way, it's nice to compliment Latins on their English when they try to speak it to you, even if it sucks. Because I'll tell you what, when you're speaking Spanish, no matter how bad it sucks, Latins will compliment you on it. And they'll genuinely mean it, even if they don't understand a stinking word of it. Oh, and by the way, when you do compliment a Latin on their English-speaking abilities, they'll almost always downplay it, even if it is really excellent. They'll say, "Oh, I know you're just being kind and polite, but thanks anyway." But as for us gringos and expats, when Latins compliment us on our bad Spanish, we're a lot more proud and happy that we can actually get our point across. We don't say, "Oh, thanks anyway, I know you're just saying that to be kind," even though that's exactly what they're doing. Nope, we suck it up like they really mean it, even if they didn't understand a frickin' thing we said. So anyway, I kept on falling back into Spanish, and she kept on saying, "No, no, English, please." So she finally explained to me, sort of exasperated, that she never gets a chance to practice her English. And in fact, she fears she's losing her touch. Oh, and by the way, all professional schools in Latin America now require their students to take English. Professional schools meaning engineering, the sciences, medicine, jurisprudence, all master's and doctorate programs too. Now you might ask, why is that, since 95% of Latin America is off the gringo tourist trail and people just don't speak English? Well, that's because all the literature, the latest breaking developments in science, and all the best internet info and search engines and stuff are in English. And things are changing so fast, especially in science and medicine, that everything cutting edge comes out in English first. Not to mention a lot of universities and graduate schools now have webinars, and they're almost always in English. And although the printed literature eventually gets translated into Spanish, it often takes years, and if there's no demand, never. Plus, like one biology grad student told me, the cost of books in English is 1/3 the price of the same ones translated into Spanish. That's a great incentive to learn English. So anyway, I'm in the doctor's office showing her my swollen, painful thumb. She looked at it, probed a while, and said, "Oh, we're going to have to lance this." And I said, "Doc, is it going to hurt?" And she said, "Think pleasant thoughts. Just think pleasant thoughts." And I said, "Go ahead, do it." So she proceeded to inject it with an anesthetic. And that was a real treat. She lanced it. Out came some pus. She gave me another injection, antibiotic, she said. Wrote a prescription and proceeded to spend the next half hour just shooting the breeze with me in English. Meanwhile, there's a gaggle of cut-rate Botox ladies sitting in the waiting room massaging their wrinkles. Now, that, my friends, is the gringo advantage, but there's more. So what do you think that set me back? How about a grand total of $45? 25 for the office call and 20 for the lancing and antibiotics and all that. Now, after that, I checked costs for similar medical procedures on the web, and I came up with a number between $400 and $700. That would be if you were in a first world specialist's office and had that done. Meanwhile, she pretty much told me her life story. So then, somewhere along the way, the subject of her family and her husband came up. You see, I just shut my mouth and let her rip in English. I know what it's like to have a pent-up desire like that. First couple of years I was off the gringo tourist trail, and my Spanish really sucked. When I'd meet a gringo, I'd blast on him in English too. Of course, that was way before Skype and Magic Jack even caller ID. Now, gringos and expats tell me, they talk more to their family and friends up north than they ever did when they were living up there. Like one gringo told me, when he lived back up in Biloxi, when certain family and friends would call, he'd have to stop everything and actually go over there and handle some kind of situation. Some people are perpetual complainers and time vampires, you know. Yep, there's one in every family. I think in my family there's four. Which is why being a couple of thousand miles away can actually make some of those previously miserable connections even tolerable. Anyway, turns out the doctor's husband's a real estate developer. So that's why her waiting room was filled with all those glossy real estate magazines. Anyway, she began to mention a high-rise residential project that her husband was working on, upscale of course, and she took the opportunity to give me his card, telling me what a great ground floor opportunity it was. Then I opened my big mouth and said, "But I recommend no one buy any real estate down here unless it's from a distressed seller because it's a huge real estate bubble." Well, that's when the conversation stopped for a few moments. Her eyes glazed over and we slipped into a less volatile subject. Though out of politeness, I did ask her how much the unit started at. And she said, "Oh, around $200,000. Then she smiled and said, "But you only need $1,000 enganche." That would be $1,000 down on a $200,000 unit. The rest will be bank financed or through the developer. Then I snuck in a curveball. I said, "By the way, Doc, how many of your patients pay with credit cards and how many pay with cash?" And then she said, "Oh, almost all of them with a credit card." I said, "Oh, well, I always pay in cash. You will take cash, won't you?" And she laughed and said, "Of course." Then I said, "Just out of curiosity, how often does it happen when someone's trying to pay with a credit card and the card doesn't go through for whatever reason, because it's maxed out, whatever?" She said, "Oh, I don't know, but it happens a lot. That's why people have multiple credit cards." And then I said, "That $1,000 down payment for a unit in that complex, can you finance that on your credit card?" And she said, "Sure, some people do." "Why, would you like to do that?" "I don't have a credit card." And she said, "Really?" And gave me a kind of nebulous look that said, "Oh boy, another crazy gringo. I mean, come on, who in the world doesn't have a credit card? Yours truly. Not one in my name, anyway. How do I get around? How do I rent cars, hotel rooms, and even get airplane tickets?" "Well, I'm not at liberty to discuss that stuff on the air. So you'll have to come down to one of my expat insiders seminars and find out for yourself. So really, the object is to get the hell out of the U.S. That is, actuate that plan B, which is vote with your feet. That's when you get your one and only second chance to have a very small footprint and a very low profile. That said, you can learn all about that stuff at my July Expat Insider Seminar. Oh, and speaking of credit cards, just last Sunday I had a dinner with a good friend who came to one of my Expat Insider Seminars a couple of years back. He's a very smart gringo with Brazilian connections and a Brazilian wife. And as we were having dinner, he said, "You know what, Johnny, I noticed here in Central America as opposed to South America, specifically Brazil, down there," he says, "banks and credit card companies and retail stores, hotel chains, you name it, are doing a hard press on the locals to sign up for various credit cards. In fact," he said, "right now the population of Brazil is credit card crazy. The more the merrier. Boy, don't we know that drill. It's a country where everyone's in debt." However, he said he doesn't see the same thing in Central America. He doesn't see the big push for people to get credit cards. And my answer to him was this: lag time, my friend. But not all lag times are equal. There's lag time between what happens in the States and Mexico. That's a short lag time because there's an open border. Then there's a lag time between what happens in Mexico and Central America. That could be a pretty long delay. Then there's lag time that happens between Central America and South America. A still longer delay. So again, not all lag times are created equal. That said, I can confirm that around 2 to 3 years ago, in Central America now, every bank, credit card company, and big retail store, and in every mall, credit card reps were bugging the hell out of everyone who walked by. I remember Latin guys and gals with clipboards practically chasing me down the aisles to get me to sign up. In fact, it got to the point where I'd say to the more persistent ones, "You want to know why I sleep really well at night? I don't have credit cards." Of course, they gave me that crazy gringo look again, but, you know, that's what life is like down here. So you could say in the last 3 years or so, pretty much everyone who's creditworthy in Central America has been tapped out with just an avalanche of credit card offers. Companies just aren't aggressively pushing it like before. In fact, the credit manager at one of the big banks here in Central America told me that right now there's too much competition and they're at the point of diminishing returns. In fact, customers are so tapped out, some credit card companies are taking losses because people just can't pay. And now, surprise, surprise, Latin Congresses are passing interest rate limit caps for credit cards. Talk about lag time. They must have passed those laws back in the States some 40 years ago now. By the way, that Latin credit manager also told me this. He said, if you follow the way credit and credit cards kind of developed in the United States, it started with a few big retail stores like Sears and Montgomery Ward's, and then Visa and MasterCard and American Express, and it was a slow evolving process getting people on board, slowly developing credit bureaus and credit scores over something like 30 years. The same thing happened with cell phones in the States. They started with those big brick ones that almost no one could afford. They were a luxury item. Then little by little, prices came down, phones got smaller, and they weren't just toys for the upper classes anymore. And that took some time too, something like 20 years. Enough time for people to easily adapt. Whereas down here in Latin America, all that time was compressed into a space of around 3 years. Same with credit cards. So down here, with a very compressed learning curve, the markets instantly got saturated. And now people are feeling the pain. By the way, as an aside, this credit card bank manager told me that he's had problems in his own family with credit cards, and he's cut both his daughter and his wife's credit cards up into little pieces. Sound familiar? Oh, and one more thing about that lag time effect. They still haven't got so-called credit consolidators here in Latin America. It's not at all like up in the States where you see them advertised on midnight TV. You know, one-stop shop to organize and rebuild your crappy credit. Well, those kind of services have not arrived yet, but they will. It's all a matter of lag time. Which is why, by the way, so many of us expats and gringos appear to be clairvoyant. Because we can predict that kind of stuff sometimes months, even years, before it ever lands down here. That's all part of your gringo advantage, you know. But where were we? Oh yeah, at the dermatologist's office. Anyway, before she lanced my thumb, ow, naturally she checked my patient history. The form I filled out in Spanish, of course, because here, way off the gringo tourist trail, nearly everything's in Spanish, and if it wasn't English, you know you're on the gringo tourist trail and probably facing gringo prices, or nearly so. You'll see that kind of bilingual stuff all over Mexico and Costa Rica, by the way. Okay, now I'm going to tell you something that you may or may not want to believe, but it's 100% true. She was looking at my patient history form. She looked at me and said, "This can't be right." And I said, "What?" She said, "Your age." She said, "It's a mistake, right? Or you're fibbing." And I said, "Nope." And she said, "Come on, let me see your driver's license." Yes, she actually said that. Now, since I'm a low-profile guy, I almost never pull my ID out for anyone. So then I said, "Would this help? Look at my hands." And she examined my hands, mostly the back of my hands, and said, "Yes, I guess you're right. The hands never lie. Even a neck we can nip and tuck, but the hands, no." Then she winked and said, "Did you have any plastic surgery?" And I gave my canned expat Eddie answer and said, "Well, no more than the next guy." Then she asked me to go into some detail on my diet, physical activities and such. Then I told her nearly all the fruits and vegetables I've been eating for the past 20 years or so come from the big open produce and vegetable markets. And the clincher was when I told her I don't eat bread, pasta, or dairy products. And I don't put sugar on anything. In fact, I told her, "You know how long a pound of sugar lasts in my house? Probably around a year." And you know what the statistics are for eating sugar up in the States? The average U.S. citizen eats over 100 pounds a year. In fact, it's only my cleaning lady and maintenance guy who use the sugar around my place. Or I should say, they have a cup of sugar and put a little coffee in it. Now, I told her I wasn't militant about that lifestyle, and I don't bring it up, unless quizzed about it. And when at a restaurant or a birthday party or something, I will have the occasional piece of cake, or a little pasta when at an Italian restaurant. And that would be maybe once or twice a month. I told her I don't have any junk food on hand either, which works fine for me because, as Oscar Wilde said, the only thing I can't resist is temptation. What about exercise, she said. Well, I told her I generally do about 1 hour a day on a treadmill and about 5 to 10 minutes of weightlifting, then about 50 to 75 push-ups. Not the girly ones either. So that's my routine about 6 days a week, and even when I'm traveling, I try to do parts of that. Then the doc said, what about your genetics? What about the rest of your family? I said, well, I have a brother about 100 pounds overweight, another about 50 pounds overweight, a sister that's about 40 pounds overweight, and my mother and my 30-year-old nephew are injectable diabetics. Then I mentioned that I don't have arthritis in my left knee anymore. I don't have carpal tunnel. I don't have high blood pressure. I take no prescription medicine, though I've always gotten the occasional migraine since I've been 12 years old. I can't seem to be able to lick that. So then why do I look 20 years younger? A lot of reasons, but I think it's about that amazingly fresh non-GMO diet and the fact that you have much lower stress living down here in Latin America, together with the fact that I eat no pasta, bread, rice, or dairy products. Though I might have one or two Coca-Colas at the beach. What else are you going to have? It's mighty hot, right? But remember, down here in Latin America, there is no high fructose corn syrup. They actually use real cane sugar. And I really blew her mind when I told her that I hadn't had a fast food hamburger, hot dog, or anything like that in over 25 years. Ever since I'd been to the Oscar Mayer Wiener Factory in Chicago. Then she said, hey, I belong to a natural nutrition and anti-aging group. We meet every couple of weeks at a restaurant. Then I said, which one? McDonald's or Burger King? She didn't laugh. She didn't get it. Then she said, would you mind maybe coming to one of our meetings to tell everyone your story, your diet, your history and such? She said, you do look 20 years younger than your real age, and you're at the perfect weight for your height, too. Then she shook her head and said, we have a tremendous diabetes and obesity problem here in Latin America now. She said, the poor, the middle class, and the rich are equally affected. So why do you think I'm bringing this up? To brag? To claim I have good genes or something? Well, I don't. My dad died at 54 of a heart attack. That was my wake-up call. That's what caused me to straighten up and fly right when it came to my own lifestyle. So if you got any kind of chronic health problems at all, coming down to Latin America, well, that will be a big part of the solution. There's no high fructose corn syrup. Local farmers bringing their stuff right to market quickly. There's 3, even 4 growing seasons, so you've got a selection of vegetables and produce to die for. And the stuff that's expensive up in the States because it's imported from down here is dirt cheap. In fact, when's the last time you paid 15 cents for an avocado or 25 cents for a pineapple or a honeydew melon? And if you're red meat eaters, you'll find it's all grass-fed. And as for chickens, well, they have factory chicken farms of a sort, but you can buy driveway chickens everywhere. And as for seafood, of course, they have stagnant piss-pool fish like tilapia and shrimp, but you know better to keep away from that stuff. Oh, I almost forgot. Before we get off the subject of the dermatologist, I gotta tell you this. She had one of those expensive multi-purpose laser machines on wheels, you know, the ones with the wand, that are advertised supposedly to do non-invasive liposuction and such. And I asked the doc about that machine. I said, seems to me amongst all the wealthy ladies down here in Latin America, laser this and that is all the rage down here, including your machine. Now, I know in theory what it's supposed to do. Heat the fat layers below the skin, disrupt the fat cells. They're supposed to die and liquefy, and over time, your body's lymphatic system absorbs and gets rid of them. And she said, that's right. Then I said, but doc, come on, does it really work? She said, for that purpose, in a word, no. So then I said, it's all a kind of a scam then, all this non-invasive lipo? And she said, pretty much, but the studies in the sales literature and other docs will tell you it does, and then some will tell you it doesn't, like me. She said, with her patients, she doesn't see a significant change. So there you have it, an honest doctor, and I found her in Latin America, telling me she paid 20 grand for a machine and it really doesn't work. So then I said, is it just an expensive doorstopper now? She said, no, it's great for superficial facial wrinkles. By the way, wrinkles in Spanish are called arrugas. And crow's feet in Spanish are called patas de gallina, chicken feet. Guess that one got lost in translation, huh? So anyway, she said, as for that machine's main selling point, non-surgical lipo, forget about it. But certainly, she said, in the next 3 or 4 years, they'll have it down. The newer machines will work as advertised, and she'll dish out another 20 grand. But when that happens, she'll be a much more discriminating buyer. So there you have it, a report on my third world trip to a first world dermatologist. So then, what were the negatives to visiting that office? Well, for one thing, the waiting room had all white Naga hide furniture. Guess she was trying to be first world trendy. At least it wasn't fabric. But come on, white? There's no worse color, it shows everything. So it was scuffed, cracked, and worn, and was, well, past its prime. There were two electric wall plate switches with the plates missing, so the wires were kind of hanging out, not good. And as far as the usual drop ceiling in the waiting room, there was a panel missing. Just an open, dark space with cobwebs in it. So again, it's details, details. Now, that's not to say a lot of doctor's offices up in the first world aren't pretty much the same. But the last time I visited one of those was maybe 30 years ago. And believe me, some of those old docs back in Chicago had equipment that looked like it came from Dr. Frankenstein's medical supply house. Hopefully things are much better up there now, but I wouldn't know. So anyway, I'll give this doc an A+ for effort and knowledge, an A for cleanliness and sterile technique, an A for having modern equipment, a C for lighting, that kind of sucked, a C- for the waiting room and patient comfort there, a D for waiting room layout and design, and a C+ for the restroom. It had the requisite paper towels, it was clean enough, and even had an electronic soap dispenser, and a spray bottle of Glade, and they call it Glade in Espanol. Glade. Man, that stuff can't be good for you. So far, so good, except for the huge crack in the mirror. Oh well, details, details. Okay, we're near the end now. Be sure to go to www.thenewexpat.com for Master Expat Blogger John Galt, and I'm on that site too. Also, subscribe to my YouTube channel. Check out the photos that go along with the show. And if you're interested in getting in on the early bird discount for my upcoming July 2016 Expat Insider Seminar, do send me an email and you'll be the first to get the info. This time it'll be July 9th through the 15th, so mark that on your calendar. Now, if your plan B is to hunker down in your basement with your dried beans and ammo, good luck with that. But if your plan B is to vote with your feet and live the good life, then you really need this seminar.
South of the border.
You've been listening to the Expat Files, living in Latin America, coming to you twice a week from somewhere south of the border. Email me, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want me to help you sort out your own Latin American plans, schedule a one-on-one consult with me. Just send an email and let me know at theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.